I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Gallant View podcast for our Premier League show. My name is Matthew Stewart and I'll be your host as always. Boys, again, another hectic weekend in the Premier League. With me tonight, we have Johnny. How are you, Johnny?
I'm great, mate. Thank you. Nice to be back on.
What's up, man? And we've got Graham. How are you, Graham?
Yeah, good, Mason. Thanks. Getting into the business end of Premier League. Obviously, we've not got Jamie tonight because we're in the business end of the Premier League.
So it feels bad laughing, Graham. We shouldn't be laughing, mate. We're doing the same thing. Johnny, before we get into the results this weekend, just want to go back on the breaking news last couple of days with the Premier League clubs voting in on a spending cap. Premier League clubs have voted in principle for plans to introduce a spending cap from the 25-26 season. The rules, should they be approved in a final vote later this year, will replace the profit and sustainability rules, hard one to say, which has caused controversy in the Premier League. Johnny, I think you're the man to go to on this. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, mate, I've done a wee bit digging into it. I think most people aren't really big fans of the profitability rules or the PSR, especially the clubs, they don't like it. So the eggheads have kind of came together. There was a meeting a few days ago with the Premier League. They're going to introduce these new financial rules. It's not going to be till the 25-26 season. So for 24-25 next season, you still have PSR in place. It's supposed to be much closer to UEFA's financial rules. It's going along their guidelines. They're going to call it, I believe, squad cost control rules. So there's two ways of looking at me. You can either say there'll be some fans on one side, they'll be saying, look, these top clubs that are on fortunes are already have a huge advantage. They have squads in place. Some have built the best squads in the league. It's going to just basically push the lower clubs further away. Some think it's going to be a good thing. So what comes down to is, if you're a club, any club not in Europe is allowed to spend 85% of its revenue on the squad. So that's your wages, your transfer fee, your agent fee, stuff like that. If you are in Europe and you can spend a maximum of 70% of your revenue. So that's not forgetting that the majority have a much higher revenue anyway. So for example, if you apply that to City or even a Man United, their revenue is massive. So it's a much higher figure. So right away, there's a red flag there. But then this is when the new thing called anchoring comes into place. So that was that It was agreed on at that meeting there, but it's still to be confirmed at the AGM, which I believe is in 4 weeks' time. Or is it next? I don't know. It's soon anyway. It has to be fully agreed, but it's agreed in principle. So the anchoring. So all clubs will only be able to spend a maximum of a multiple of what the bottom club earns in TV revenue. Right, now that's probably a wee bit hard to get heads around, but for example, whoever finishes bottom of the Premier League, and this blew my mind, gets 103 million for finishing bottom. Yeah, I never knew it was that high. That's about twice over TV rights in Scotland, isn't it? That's madness. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, the multiple, which they're trying to agree on, it's believed it's going to be somewhere between 4 and 5%. Has to get applied. So, for example, a top club's maximum cap would be around 460 million. So you take that 103 million, we'll say 4.5 for argument's sake, multiple. So that's their cap. So even if you're a City or wherever, 460 million is your cap. It's still a fair size of a cap. And then you can apply that to the bottom of the league. They ain't going to get anywhere near that. It's not fully agreed. These are the figures that are being discussed at the minute. And like I say, they'll be agreed at the Premier League AGM, which is next month, sorry. Couldn't remember the date. Now, I know that's probably sounds a wee bit as clear as mud, but that's basically what was given. And not all that. There wasn't much more clarity than that. So I'm assuming after this AGM, we'll find out more. But for what I'm led to believe is this is going to happen. The only thing that has to be agreed on is the multiple. That's it. The rest of it's pretty much agreed on.
Thanks for that, Johnny. Listeners, you've got your very own Johnny going through it there. Don't need to listen to Sky Sports. Graham, what's your thoughts on this? I'll be honest, just I've read a little bit today and listened to a lot today. And if I'm the other European clubs, I'm really happy with this news, to be honest, because I feel like this is a way to kind of close that gap that the last couple of years, I think that the Premier League has really started to pull away financially. So can understand why some clubs are, you know, for it and obviously changing what's happening with the profit and sustainability rules at the moment. But I don't know, I just see it like the bigger clubs won't be able to flex their muscles, should I say.
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Johnny. I've not really had a chance to look into it. I actually think the way it's been put there, I actually think it potentially maybe levels it a bit more to a certain extent. Now, I don't think clubs with higher revenue should ever be hamstrung just because clubs near the bottom of the league or whatever don't have that. So I think the relative difference in spends is always going to be there, whether you've got FFP or not. Obviously, what this does is, I guess, stop some unfathomable billionaire coming in and just spending insane amounts like we saw at Man City in 2008 and whatever, right? So I guess it's preventing any investors just coming in and, in essence, maybe doing what Man City did, right? So bad timing if you're Newcastle. However, if your revenue streams are that big, then you should be spending a lot more than the other clubs. It's not Man U or Liverpool's fault. They're two of the biggest clubs in the world, for example. And the same thing, whether you're a Sheffield United, Burnley, you wouldn't be spending anything like the money we're talking about, regardless of FFP or not. So I think it's good that European clubs are then put down at 70%. That 15% difference, I guess, obviously the money you make in Europe is unbelievable. We know that from our point of view, from a Rangers side of it, but obviously these clubs run deep and to go to the tail end of the Champions League is worth probably almost three digits of millions, I would have thought. So from what Johnny said, I think it probably sounds pretty good. And to be fair, a lot of these clubs aren't going to vote in. I'm assuming it would have taken a majority, or I don't know the majority in England or who votes in, etc. But you've got to imagine that smaller clubs are going to feel like it's a more level playing field. So at the end of the day, this is just, as I say, probably to stop those billionaires coming in and just investing all sorts and just dilutes the game a little. So yeah, bad timing for Newcastle. We know they've probably already got to sell, not talking about selling Isak, etc. But I think in the long run, it's probably sounds okay to me. But it certainly probably is a lot clearer when you're basing it on revenue than the current FFP, which I tell you, if you ask me right now what the rules and regs are for that, I'm not sure I'd be able to talk it through, to be honest. So if we're talking about pure revenue streams for the clubs, and then on top of that tele money and European etc., that sounds probably maybe a bit clearer for the fans as well, which is the most important part, right?
Johnny, am I right in saying Man United are not in favour of this though?
I'm not 100% sure who was, like Graham said there, they never actually clarified who was there. I'd assume every club has a representative. That's an assumption, but I mean, it has to be a fair one. The Newcastle thing was something that I meant to say, but Graham's absolutely spot on. They're going to be fizzing purely down to bad timing. Although, given how deep these people are with the money involved, they must have had an inkling that there was going to be changes. You know, it might not have been as exact as what it is now, but they must have known that. They must have had a warning. They know everything. But yeah, like you say, that is a bit sucks for them. Thinking the long run, I can see some positives for it. I can also see some red flags. Like you say, it could have a knock-on effect on who you could attract to the league. Like, as in, I'm talking about the top pinnacle. But to be honest, there's a lot of players who want to just play in the Premier League. And if the clubs want to make it happen, they'll find a way. So, yeah, I mean, and right now, let's say, the information I gave you is pretty much what I could dig up. There wasn't a lot more than that. So yeah, we'll probably have a lot more to talk about in 4 weeks' time to see where it goes with it.
When we actually talk about Newcastle, it's interesting because the thing about Newcastle is outside England or the UK, they probably don't have that standing, right? So from revenue and shirt sales around the world, that's where they're going to be really hands tied by this. But what it does do, if you've got investors that are really interested in building the club, like, because yeah, Man City, okay, we see what's happened on the field, but behind the scenes and what they've built from a club point of view, from stadium to training complex to the women's team, etc., if you've got an investor that's really interested in doing something like that, then it certainly means from a Newcastle point of view, yeah, you're not going to get that immediate success. But if these investors are really, really tied into this project, then what's to say Newcastle in 10 years aren't going to have that Man City model of building the club and then having huge, bigger revenue worldwide, etc., like Man City do. So I think it levels the playing field, but probably does open up for more investment in clubs and having a stronger league all in as well. So yeah, it sounds good, but you know, probably it'll be good to maybe listen to some of the pundits and etc. and see what their thought is on it, and coming from the footballing side.
Definitely.
So sorry mate, I just nosed a wee bit deeper at a different part. You're right, the vote was made in principle and was passed. That's the one we just seen. But there still has to be a final vote, like a, you know, a stamp on it. That will be done at the AGM. So it's not concrete. It's believed that it will be. But you're spot on. The only three clubs were against the spending cap. That was Man United, Man City, shock horror, Aston Villa, and you'll never guess the last one.
Newcastle.
No, Chelsea abstained. They shat it.
In layman's terms, it's went through the House of Commons, but it's waiting for the House of Lords to get it all tick off. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, it's funny, but we'll see what happens.
I hope they will check the junk mail. Hopefully they've got no Dundee in there, you know. Boys, to the games at the weekend. Johnny, let's go with the North London derby. Me and Jamie touched on it last week, and we said how important this was going to be, not only for fourth place, but obviously in the race for the title. I've got to give Arsenal a lot of credit. I was talking to you before we went live, and I haven't given Arsenal enough credit, I don't think, this season. I didn't expect them to be here, top of the league. I know Man City got a game in hand. We'll touch on them in a minute. But just to go to your biggest rivals. And I thought that was excellent first half. I thought Tottenham were poor, don't get me wrong, but go there and I know it ended up 3-2, but the game was won in the first half.
I thought Arsenal were excellent, mate. Probably like yourself, probably haven't given them the credit they deserve. I'll be honest, they're where I expected them to be, but I probably didn't expect them to be as dominant as they are. You know, like I said, I still think they'll fall short, but I think, like you, I think they deserve full credit. You can only improve on the last season. Yeah, you can only right the wrongs. Last season, they would have folded by now. Instead, they're sweeping teams aside. I thought the game itself, I thought it was a... You know, I've put my notes in, I've put the wrong score. That's terrible, eh? I've actually got this wrong score written down, so I'm reading it and I'm throwing myself off saying, wait a minute, that wasn't the score. So yeah, sorry. 3-2, I had 2-2 in my notes, that's terrible. I just watched it. I thought they were really good, mate. The first half, I'll be honest with you, Spurs, they're fucking criminal. Nothing short of. Really, really bad. Never loved that. I didn't think they landed a punch. Something we spoke about before with the Spurs side, sorry, I know you asked me about Arsenal, but it frustrates the hell out of me watching them with their playing out for the back and they're persisting with it. I can understand teams wanting to do it. I mean, I like to see it myself, but you're playing against, for me, the best high press in the league. They will not give you a minute, they'll not give you an inch. Both goals, if I remember right, came for being high-pressed by Arsenal. That's credit to Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal do it, and they're bloody good at it. Loads of teams have fell short there, and Ange has to spot that. It's going to happen. Yes, there'll be some times you can play out for the back, but there's some where you absolutely should not. The corner that led to the goal for 1-0, that was for pressure. I think it was the keeper. Defender had no space. I can't remember who it was. Arsenal went in, got a corner, scored from it. But, mate, listen... There's still, I believe, Arsenal, they've got 3 games left. I don't think they're going to win it. But, I mean, if they can get through this, the end of the season, win all those games, I take my hat off to them. I mean, listen, it could still go wrong. I mean, I could be wrong. Stars could align. I just do not see it happening. But I think that all I can say is they've improved. Arteta's got them flying. They are sweeping teams aside. They went to the North London Derby. Yes, it was 3-2 in the end, but it was only that score because Arsenal gifted them a route back into the game. It could have been way higher than what it was. The 2 goals, they flattered Tottenham. So, yeah, it was a mix. Tottenham were rotten, but Arsenal were really, really good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Graham. Spurs have conceded over 50 Premier League goals this term, and Arsenal have won consecutive top flight away games at Spurs for the first time since 1988. I can't believe that when I see that today. But yeah, just got to say what Johnny says there. Credit goes to Arsenal for winning the game. But Spurs, do you know what's funny? I think there's been a big, obviously a derby result can do that. But there's been a big shift the last couple of days in Spurs fans, the way that they're talking about Postecoglou. I suppose we're football fans, a little bit, we are fickle, right? But there has been a big change, and they said he has to change it next season. Otherwise, he's in trouble. But we all know he's not changing it.
No, he's... listen, Johnny, Johnny's probably covered most things about the game there. Johnny, by the way, you shouldn't ever worry about notes. Just do what I do and just talk shite and waffle for a good hour, you know? Yeah, listen, he's not going to change it. And you're obviously down south, so you speak to these fans in and out. I didn't know there was grumblings. They're fifth in the league. He's not going to change the way they play. If anything, if they get the transfer window right, I would expect them to be a more polished team next season and do better with what they're doing. They're not going to change. That's just not going to happen. If they get better quality players, they'll be further up the league, in my opinion. Games like that's going to happen. Johnny's right, they got into it because Arsenal let them into it. They wouldn't have been anywhere. It probably would have finished worse, but as I said, Arsenal let Tottenham into it, and that's what happened. He's not going to change the way he's going to play. He said that, so I think they just need to accept that, you know, they're probably going to finish fifth. I think it would have been an important point for them if, with two games in hand, with 6 points behind Villa, but I think it's likely they're not going to finish fourth anyway, and we know they've got Man City, etc. in the running, so I still think that fifth for Tottenham this season, for most fans, might have been unexpected considering they got rid of Harry Kane. And if had they kept Harry Kane, and he would have got 25 to 30 goals this season, does that get them into fourth, the top four? I'd probably imagine it would. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the summer. From an Arsenal point of view, I think we'd spoke just after the Brentford game, and we'd looked at their running, and there was all these hurdles, and we said, Man City, look, they've had a couple of rank results away there. If they can hold firm and get a result or even a win, I thought it was kind of tactical masterclass. Then go away to Brighton, who they'd only beat once in the last 6 occasions in all competitions. Then Wolves away, Chelsea at home, Tottenham away. Look, see, bar that blip at Villa, I mean, they've rid this wave. And to be fair, it's, I think looking at the games, you would expect them to beat Bournemouth, Everton at home. It's if they beat Man U away, then I could see maybe Man City slipping up potentially, Tottenham, etc. I don't know. These are two, the way Postecoglou has Tottenham set up might lend itself better for Man City. Not that Pep won't outclass them tactically potentially if he doesn't want. What I'm just saying is that's a tough game. But Arsenal are so far, they're batting away a lot of the challenges since that Villa game, and it's impressive to watch. So yeah, as I say, I just want last game of the season, there's still to be a title to play for. I think that's what every kind of fan looking on to Premier League wants.
Yeah, I said similar. Remember when we started the season, we were asking about Spurs, and I think I'd said that their goal should be, if they can finish roughly where they've been, minus Harry Kane, I think that's a step. And it's a huge transition for them. And like Graham said, they are going to have games or little runs where they're losing games. He's going to need time. Like you say though, Mason, fans are fickle. They're funny, they'll change very quickly. And like you say, you've already seen that, because go back 2 months and he was a messiah. I mean, I like the man, right? Nothing to do with his previous, don't shoot me down. Just seems like a genuine bloke and a decent gaffer, but he has to have a game, a plan B. Like Graham's saying, like, you've got City still to go there in the title run, but any manager worth his salt can look at Tottenham and see the blueprint and know exactly how they're going to line up and what they're going to try and do. And when you've got one of the best squads in the league, you can cancel that. Arsenal done it at the weekend. They never looked in trouble until Raya had his moment of madness. I don't know if you've seen one thing about the game in general was the penalty. Did you see the penalty that Son scored that the referee missed?
Yeah.
Oliver is 2 yards away from that. He's got the perfect view, and he still shat the bed and let it go to VAR. You know, I mean, that comfort blanket of VAR is taking everything away for the referees. Sorry, that was a bit of a tangent, but it was one that really stuck out to me how he never gave that.
Do you know, I think you're absolutely spot on, Postecoglou. I agree word for word what you said there. But see the one with the penalty. I think he's actually, the worst thing is, I think he's not relying on VAR. I just think he's just, because I'm watching his reaction, he's like, he actually don't think that's a penalty. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. Even live, I was like, it's the most blatant penalty ever. But
that's even more worrying.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going by his reaction. Listen, I might be wrong. I do think referees are relying on VAR to make the decision. But just his reaction, it was like, no, it won't. And I was thinking that blatant. Yeah. But yeah.
It's small margins, mate. I mean, at the start of the game, Van de Ven scored. Decent finish. He got done for offside. I mean, the small margin is, on that offside line, it was so tight. The only reason that he got called offside, if Gabriel had a slightly fatter ass, he would have been onside. It was basically his butt cheek was about half an inch too short. So, small margins, mate, you never know. But listen, Arsenal were good.
Yeah. As you said, what surprise, I do think they'll win the next 3 games. So, it's over to City to see if they can win their games. And Graham, they did win at the weekend away at Nottingham Forest. They backed it up 5-0. I think they beat Brighton away from home 4-0. I thought it was really good that night. we'll come to Brighton a little bit later on. But as for Nottingham Forest, I didn't think Man City were great at the weekend. They'd done what they needed to do. But Chris Wood, I know he wouldn't have been watching Match of the Day on Sunday night. Two sitters for me. Just doesn't make connection with either of them properly. I think if he gets a good connection, he scores both. I see there was a little bit of Pep Guardiola said that the pitch weren't great, and that was why. not sure how true that was, but yeah, what did you make of Man City at the weekend? Obviously, Haaland coming back in and getting a goal as well.
Pep wants to go up to Dens Park and play if he's got pitch troubles, to be honest. Listen, it was a professional performance, and that was it, and they got the result. Pish game to watch, didn't enjoy it at all. You're right, Chris Wood, one of those guys, when he's on it, he's a pretty decent striker to have. He can grab some goals, but he has these misses in them. But for Man City, easy 3 points. I don't think anyone expected anything different, even though Forest are fighting for their lives down there. Forest would have probably just thought anything would be a bonus. And Man City got the 3 points. Big thing for them is Haaland's back in the goal trail as well. He's came back and he's scored. And obviously that's important for any striker to, I guess, on a dry patch. I don't know, the last time Haaland scored, it was probably only a few games. But for Haaland, as we know, is a dry patch. So look, for any striker coming back, he's got his goal. They've got 3 points on the goal. All they need to do is keep winning, and it's Man City. So, I mean, let's face it, likelihood as they do, and they didn't, and that's really it.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I didn't enjoy the game either. I thought it was a dull watch, but Johnny, for City, it's just about getting the win. They've conceded quite a few goals lately, so they would have been happy with a clean sheet as well, especially going into the next four games.
Yeah, mate, they were lucky to go away with the clean sheet, like you've touched on. Most other days, Chris Wood would have banged them in, especially in recent form. I don't know what it is exactly, but he's on something like 10 goals in maybe 15, 16 games. That's a decent run, especially when you were at Forest and they were flirting with the relegation for quite a while. So on a better day, it might have been a different outcome. But, I mean, this is what City do, mate. They can come out. They can look average, like you say. The game was pretty shite. It was a bit dull. There wasn't a hell of a lot happening. Forest had a lot of good chances in that game, but maybe on another day it would have been a different outcome. But City find a way. They don't turn up sometimes. They can look poor. They'll hold possession and not really have a lot of threat. And then before you know it, you're 2-0 down and you're not really sure what's happened because you've spotted all the chances yourself. That just seems to be a City thing. Especially at this point of the season, mate. Listen, it's what they do. They're good at it. We spoke about it pre-pod that whatever happened with this running, you could guarantee that City will drop a gear in the last couple of months. And the only way you're going to take the title away for them is if you can hold that same kind of form. Now, Arsenal have held that same kind of form, give them credit. We know what's happened to Liverpool. But I just don't see them dropping points in that running, mate. For all they weren't great at the weekend, I just think they're a very professional side, and Pep finds a way. That sounds a bit like Jurassic Park, but he does.
The problem, I guess the main problem for Arsenal is the teams that Man City have left aren't playing for much, right? So you've got Wolves, Fulham. I mean, Tottenham are away to Chelsea and Liverpool the next two games. By all intents and purposes, I think that's the biggest chance of the slip-up away at Tottenham. But, I mean, Tottenham, let's face it, could be trying to hold on potentially to fifth place by that point. I'd need to look at the table. But I think 6 points, I mean, Man U on their tail, we aren't doing much. So, yeah, maybe Tottenham are just going to have fifth and that's it. So it's like that with other teams Man City are playing. Not that you would expect Man City to drop away to Fulham, at home to Wolves, etc. But you would at least want them playing teams fighting for something, and they're not. So, I don't know. I think Arsenal probably pin their hopes on maybe Fulham away, who are in a decent run of form, Tottenham away. But, I mean, it really is now, with four games to go, hard to see Man City slipping up. But you never know. You never know.
With them games, imagine if it was Spurs that won Arsenal the league. Oh, that would be some story, yeah. Wouldn't it?
I think if they have fifth, Man U can't catch them, they can't catch Villa in fourth. I think the Spurs fans will be wanting Postecoglou not to change his style and just
fucking. No one accept that.
Tottenham, Spurs have got two games in hand over Aston Villa, but it's hard to see them winning both of them. There would still be a point off Villa. Man United are 6 points off Tottenham, but Tottenham have got a game in hand. So again, it's hard to see that happen. I think the table as it is, probably first to seventh, it's round about that area, is looking pretty close. Yeah. Pretty nailed on, sorry. If anything, Newcastle could catch Man United.
The way they're going, I think they will. Johnny, to be fair. Graham, come back to you. Liverpool lost more ground in the title race this week because they lost 2-0 at Goodison Park. Again, just a team void of ideas. I think they're not moving the ball quick enough. We see them on the weekend. That first half at the weekend, I don't think it was a great weekend. To be fair, I didn't enjoy the North London derby, I'll give you that, but that West Ham Liverpool first half was like watching a pre-season game. I thought the atmosphere was flat and the game itself, the pace of the game for a Premier League game, really surprised me, where West Ham still got a chance to get Europe. And Liverpool going for a title, I know it would have been difficult, obviously, the result last week, but just to stay in it. It was important, and second half there was a little bit better. Got lucky with a couple of the goals, but overall, there's problems there.
I think, from an outsider point of view, you wanted that three horse race, right? You wanted that up until the last day. It was a pipe dream for everyone. That would have been amazing. For Liverpool, it's just gone. And that game against West Ham, they play like a team who know they're not going to win the league. They play like a team whose manager's leaving. They play like a team who have nothing else to play for. I think it would have been really, really helpful for... I think when they went out against Atalanta, for example, everyone was thinking, right, focus on the league, etc. I really think that's been a detriment to them. I think it would have been good for them to still have a couple of fronts to go at. With that, going out to Atalanta, the back of some disappointing Premier League results, they're a team who know they're going to be relatively disbanded in the summer, with probably a couple of big players moving on, their managers away. And it's just interesting to know just how much that's maybe affected the squad, knowing that Klopp's leaving. Then you see that kind of back and forth between Klopp and Salah in the touchline. Does that happen if they're still really going for that title? Does it happen if they're going for four trophies, if they hadn't been knocked out the FA Cup, blah, blah, blah? So maybe not. It just very much feels like a team that's coming to the end. And it's from that point of view, it's probably quite a sad end. I think a lot of fans, if you're a Liverpool fan, might have been a bit disappointed to see that going on in the touchline. It's not a big deal, and I'm sure that probably happens all the time in football clubs, but to see it in the touchline is probably not something you want to see.
Got to come to Johnny. He's smirking there. He's obviously delighted to see it going on, isn't he? But Johnny, what was your thoughts on that? I think Graham's absolutely spot on. I always say I never think it's a good idea for a manager to announce he's leaving that early when he did. What did you make of that with Salah? I hate to see any players sort of coming back at a manager like that. And, you know, just whilst we're on the subjects of Liverpool, Arne Slot looks like he's got a job. So, Graham, I'll come to you in a sec. But what's your thoughts on him coming in to Liverpool as well?
Okay, start of the game. Jamie, if you're listening, buckle up, mate. Pretty much what Graham said, yeah, with the game itself. You know, they looked like a team that was at the back end of the season who were playing for nothing, which was absolute madness, because you win that game at the weekend, yes, it's a long shot, but you're still in. You know, I mean, you're still there, you're still thereabouts. Absolutely. And we were talking pre-show about this kind of rot. I don't know if you want to talk, if you want to call it burnout, if you want to say it's bottled, whatever you want to word it is, it's came in. It's not just like at the weekend there, it started a few quite a few game weeks ago. You know, we heard them getting thrown out of Europe, convincingly thrown out of Europe. We seen them drop. Well, they lost in the cup. You raised that one to Man United. They got knocked out of that. They drew with Man United in the league. They lost to Palace. They beat Fulham, lost to Everton, which was another shocker. So, yeah, it's been creeping in, mate. It's been creeping in. The big game players are not turning up. Salah's been a passenger before that Atalanta game. Going back further than that, he's done next to nothing. He's had a couple of penalties, but really that's about it. He looks completely lost on the pitch. Now, I'm not going to go in on Salah. Look, Salah's been outstanding for Liverpool, and he's been one of the best players in the league during the time he's been in it. Yeah, some seasons you can say he was the best player in that league. So I'm taking nothing away from him, but I'm talking purely on the impact of his title. They rely on him massively, massively. He's not firing, and he's playing every game. So what he had the hissy fit for at the weekend, only him and Klopp know, whether it's about minutes, about that benching, or if there's something else here, we don't know. But if you put it down to minutes of being benched, look, any club, doesn't matter how good the player is, they're never above the club. They're never bigger than the club. And if he's not turning up, it's been like they've been playing with 10 men with Mo Salah on that pitch for a few weeks. He deserved to be dropped. I don't think he can have an argument. You know, if you're expecting to start every game purely on status, then there's a problem right away. Regarding Klopp announcing it, mate, listen, it was a question mark the minute it came out. Most of the Liverpool fans will be, you know, they kind of bought into it was going to motivate them and fire them up to go and win as many things as they could, bring home the quadruple, all this kind of nonsense. So we look at it now, obviously that wasn't the case, but we didn't know at the time. But I mean, when you look with hindsight, it's a massive risk to do that, huge risk, given at that time they were not looking like dropping points. And for a while after that, they never either. So it comes down to what we said last season. Look, Arsenal should have won the league and they shot the bet. Liverpool had the control of this league. They were in control of the points. All they had to do was keep winning. It didn't matter what City and Arsenal did. If they kept winning, they would have won the league. Liverpool have shot the bet. That's not a dig. That's just basically what we would say. The exact same if City done it right now. You know, we'd give them absolute pelters. So, yeah. The new gaffer, I watch a lot of Dutch football, mate. He's been good at Fignon. Again, I think it's a gamble. It's always going to be a gamble. He's never done the English league. I think he looks like a decent gaffer. He speaks well. He's done wonders with Fignon. One of my best mates is actually Fignon Dart. He's from Holland. He's absolutely gutted that he's leaving. Doesn't mean it's going to translate over at the Premier League. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those ones we'll just need to wait and see, mate. Time will tell.
Yeah, definitely. Graham, just quickly, what's your thoughts on Arne Slot coming on? I think Johnny's spot on, it is a gamble, but every managerial appointment's a gamble. The way the managerial market is at the minute, the biggest clubs in the world are struggling to get managers. But what's your thoughts on this one?
Interesting appointment for sure. He's not got an absolute bucket load of experience where he's been. I think he seems to have done relatively well. Jamie obviously talked in the past about, like, the way they look at managers and appoint them depends on, you know, a lot of statistics now and how they play, etc. I think for anyone coming in after Klopp, it's going to be difficult. Whether there's going to be longevity there, they're certainly giving it a shot. I thought it would maybe be a kind of elder statesman manager for a few years just to steady the ship, oversee the transition. I guess if they are looking for the long term with this specific manager, maybe it is a good appointment for that. I think if you're going to the Dutch league, for me, I think I've said it already to you guys, Peter Bosz, I think, would have been a good one. You know, he's older manager. He's managed some of the biggest clubs in Europe, in Ajax, Dortmund. He's done a brilliant job with PSV this year. I think he'd have been a good guy to have in for a few years. But as I say, look, obviously they're going with this looks, I assume, to be the long-term appointment rather than, you know, what we maybe thought we'd see the transitional appointment. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think the one thing he's got is the one good thing this has done for Liverpool this season, with a lot of the injuries they've had, like when you look at that Carabao Cup win against Chelsea, for example, some of the youngsters, like, they almost had no right to win that, for example. So like, they've got a lot of promising young players. And if they've got a manager who has a history of bringing on young players, which I think Slot does to an extent, with that big transition, then, yeah, who knows, it could be a really good appointment. And like, as we've said, you don't know what's going to happen with Man City and their charges next season. Who knows where Arsenal are going to be, Man U, etc. So it could be a really good opportunity for him to come in at the ground running, and you just never know. So yeah, look, it's an interesting appointment, and it'll be interesting to look and see how he does.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be a wee bit tricky for him, mate, because I was thinking about this earlier. He comes in. Now, when Klopp came in, they changed the way they were dealing with things. They were trying to mould the club and have the manager follow their ideas and path. When Klopp came in, they basically said to him, what do you want to do? What do you want to build? And we'll build around you. And it worked for them. So now, are they going to do that again? Because in that time, they had absolutely like next to no success before Klopp came in for a long time. Sporadic, but nothing major. And then they had that time under Klopp. So they have improved as a club. They've brought in on us a fair few. Then they have to hit the reset button. So are they expecting him to keep up that momentum that they had under Klopp, or do they give him the reset as well in a time?
See, that's it. I mean, when we talk about momentum, right, they've won 5 trophies in 36. Liverpool now, the Premier League and Champions League within that period of time has obviously topped it off. So I think it's going to be tough because the pedigree Klopp has and the love he has from the Liverpool fans, but I wouldn't get in the bandwagon and say the success he's had is like unprecedented or anything like that. I think Klopp's brilliant, and I think a lot of football fans like him because of who he is and how he handles himself. But I don't think it's as daunting. I think the biggest task is just the transition. And I think we all know Salah's probably gone, for example. But then it's not as if they're going to sell him the cheap. So you've got a lot of money to then reinvest in the team, and with a good kind of skeleton of young players, I actually think it's a better time to come in than maybe some people are saying. What do I know? Watch them finish 9th next season or something. Who knows?
That's exactly my point, mate, because there's a huge unknown element to that. Because like you say, Salah's going to go, and I doubt he's going to be the only one. There's going to be players there. If Klopp's gone, they're going to want to go. You know, they're very loyal. I'm not saying they're going to follow him. I'm just saying it might not be for them anymore. We'll find out more, obviously, when the season closes.
What's interesting is Klopp never even wanted Salah in the first place. So it would have been Julian Brandt instead of Salah at the time. So I'm not sure they would have won or had the success they would have if they hadn't bought Salah, mind you. So probably a good one that Klopp got overruled in that specific buy.
I think they need to spend well in close season. Salah's not an easy replace for them. You know, it's a lot of goals. Yeah, he's been crap for a few weeks, but over the course, he's been outstanding. And I agree with Graham in terms of the honours and what's came in and that. I think sometimes it gets a wee bit inflated because of the love and the way people look towards Klopp. I can understand that. But yeah, listen, it's one of these things. You can only say, mate, time, you can only do it. Time will tell. But I will be interested to see how patient they are. Well, if it doesn't hit the ground on it.
Bowen, that's who they should go and replace Salah with, in my opinion, but that's for another podcast. Johnny, coming back to you, mate. Newcastle smashed Sheffield United 5-1. I think I've read every stat that Sheffield United have set, conceding goals. Yeah, I'm not going to bore the listeners with that again tonight. They're finally relegated. And it was a comfortable afternoon for Sheffield United. I don't know if we've got much to add, but all of us on we've absolutely caned Sheffield United all season. But just a question I'll ask you, Johnny, is do you think Newcastle will be able to keep Alexander Isak beyond the summer?
I think it depends on where they are with financial for the payment. You still got next season, but they have to adhere to these other rules that we spoke about previously. I don't know exactly where they are. There's obviously a lot of chat going about Bruno as well. They slapped a 100 million tag on. Great player, but 100 million player for somebody that runs like he's towing a caravan, I'm not entirely convinced. I love Isak. Isak's a talented, talented player. I mean, there might be a huge interest, you know, a massive bid out with FFP that might tempt them. But, I mean, they're not a club that really needs to sell out with that FFP. So I think that would be the only factor, mate. Obviously, it depends on what the player thinks as well. I think the only thing that shocked me for the weekend there, for that result, the Newcastle scoring five, you could have probably predicted that. But Sheffield scoring first, that shocked me. But no, mate, listen. Sheffield have been down since I said they were going down and before we even season started. I knew they were going to be dog meat.
Once I feel bad saying that. Backed them to stay up early doors. You knew they were doing
Mad man.
What you'll say about Newcastle, right? If they're going to sell a player for me, they need to sell Guimarães. I think they could afford to lose him, especially when you've got Tenali coming back, etc. They've still got a relative class player in the middle of the park. They cannot afford to lose Isak. Isak and Inga banged on about that enough this season. Isak, probably behind Haaland for me, is the best striker in the league anyway. I think he's absolute class. And look, you talk about Salah, etc., and trying to replace somebody. Trying to replace goals is unbelievably difficult, as everyone knows. So I think if they're going to sell somebody for big money, it's got to be Guimarães. They've got to hold on to Isak at all costs. For me, I made a bet with a Newcastle fan that Howe would be gone by the 1st of January. So if they sell Isak, I don't see them getting in the top eight next season. And Howe's off, Ski. I win my bet. Happy days.
Graham, just to tell you, though, I actually think the start they had, the injuries they've had, they had obviously Europe this season, just everything that went around it, the main signing in the summer, as you said, Tonali, who I said was going to be player of the season. Didn't want to let that one in again this season, but that went pear shape. But if they do get Europa League, I'd say that's still a really good season. Consider, I know the sort of expectation for Newcastle's gone through the roof, but get Champions League football, then you go and get Europa League football, and you sign some really good players. I think that's big progress for Newcastle. I think they'll be happy with that.
Yeah, I think their fans will be happy with it, and I know they all love Eddie Howe. Yeah, maybe that's good for them, but I think with the investment they've made, etc., they should be pushing a lot higher than they are. Look, yeah, they've been unlucky with draws and they've been unlucky with injuries, and it does show. Look, it is hard when you've not been in Europe for a long time. A lot of Premier League clubs struggle with that first season. Look at West Ham and their run to the Conference League. Again, the league form dipped. Look at Brighton this season. I mean, they're really a shadow in the league of what they were in the last few. And yeah, we see Newcastle, you go at another extra front and you realise the depth of your squad's not probably what it should be. I think, honestly, genuinely, I believe that it might be a detriment to the league next season again if they get back in the Europa League, because I don't know, as Johnny says, with FFP, etc., I don't see how they're building that squad depth in the summer to again go for Europe. But obviously that's a step down in a squad of their stature, should be able to cope with the challenges maybe differently. They probably were unlucky getting put out of the Champions League, and the two teams in our group then going to the semi-finals of the Champions League, which I think a lot of us maybe couldn't see at the time. So yeah, look, we'll see. I think that, I don't know, I've just got a feeling Howe's going to be gone before the end of the year. But yeah, we'll see. I think it all depends. If they sell Isak, I just don't see where the goals come from. From a Sheffield United point of view, by the way, I've got to say that the three goals from the record amount of goals conceded in a Premier League season, which was set in a 42-game league season. So, I mean, it just goes to show you just how insane their poor fans, man. Honestly, some of those results at home have been brutal, so fair play to them for sticking all of that out as well. And you never know, that Wilder's been there and done it, they'll maybe just bounce back up.
Yeah. Sorry, wasn't muted there. My bad.
He's going to come in there, Johnny.
Right.
I'll
Oh, she's looking at me. 97 goals conceded total. That's comedy. That's comedy.
You know, the scary thing about that as well, Rangers were linked with two of their main centre-halves in the last 18 months.
Let's not forget Big Ollie. We'll bring him as well. They just didn't have the squad for it. Listen, they just did not have the squad for it. That's basically what it comes down to. I tell you one thing we didn't mention. I know we sing Isaac's plaudits, and rightly so. But an understudy from Callum Wilson is absolutely dynamite. The only thing that kills that lad is injuries. You take away injuries and give him a full season, that'll Graham Swinton.
He's overrated. The most overrated player. I think he's overrated personally. But yeah.
I just think he's a good goal scorer. I really do.
Newcastle's,
I think he's actually a much more complete player.
Bournemouth has level, I think. Callum Wilson, maybe that kind of.
I do think he's a good goal scorer, but you're right. I think injuries have really, you know, thrown him in, because he does go in a little spree and then he's out for 6 weeks. You know what I mean? It's just always good for a goal against West Ham, Callum Wilson. Johnny, Chelsea, I was going to say bounce back, but put in a better second half performance to come back and draw against Aston Villa, who have been, you know, flying of late. You must have watched that first half and thought, here we go again. And I was expecting three and fours, mate. I've got to be honest, after the first half. But I thought they were a really good second half, and they were really unlucky not to win the game. How is that, the third goal? Desai, I think. How have they disallowed that? Shocking for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old cliche, mate, the game of two halves, but it really, really was. First half, Villa were excellent, never gave Chelsea a minute to settle. I think they came out of the traps that fast that Chelsea were just, you know, shell-shocked, rabbit in the headlights kind of syndrome. They were inviting shots on, they were just getting caught out all over the pitch. I don't know if you've seen the first goal, Cucurella decided to have a quick catnap, never bothered marking anybody, ball comes off somebody, ricochets off the keeper, I think it is, and then comes off him. Gifted the goals, but taking nothing away from Villa, they were far, far better. The young lad Rogers, he's really, really looking good. I mean, I know it's a few he's banged in there, and he was good at the weekend too. So, like you say, when I watched the first half, I thought this is going to be a cricket score. It gets to the second half, and it was a completely different teammate. I don't know if it was a hairdryer or what they gave them, but the attitude changed. They were tight. They were pushing really high up the pitch. Never gave them a minute. They were touch-tight marking, which they've done none of in the first half. Madueke, again, I mean, I mentioned him a few weeks ago. I said that he's a hothead, but if they can get that lad under control, I think he could do. You know, he's a good player. There is a player there. He was good in the second half. And they had so many chances. And like you say, at the back end, they should have won the game, really, based on the second half. They were far more dangerous than what Villa offered. The late goal, take nothing away from Conor Gallagher's strike. I don't know if you've seen that. That was an absolute perler. He's got that in his locker, mate. I think when he was, like, when we've seen him do it away on loan when he was at Palace, he had more free rein. If you give him that wee bit extra rein, he can do that. And yeah, for the penalty, mate, yeah, I watched it and, you know, I had a group chat going and, he's shoved them in the back, so penalty and that. But it's literally very, you know, there's nothing in it. It's a wee nudge in the back, but all that comes down to is consistency again, because you'll see that again next week and it'll be fine, you know, and it was VAR'd. But like you say, you can't get away with anything now, mate. Even if it's the slightest nudge or a pulley up top, it's hard to get away with VAR. So, yeah.
Graham, what was your thoughts on that at the weekend? Chelsea just blowing up and cold pretty much all season. And
then
I suppose the point from being 2-1
be
pretty disappointing in the end.
Yeah, that's Chelsea this season. I think probably Villa will look at that as a game they would have wanted to win and really solidify fourth place, I think. Look, as you say, it's the hot and cold factor. They need a bit of a clear out in the summer, but they've got such an unbelievable basis of a squad there, and some of the young players they have are exceptional. And it's just, I think the first kind of 10 games next season really are going to show what it's about. I don't know if Pochettino lasts more than that if they have a really slow start, considering the players they have. So I think it's just all about the changes in the dressing room, who they get out, who they sell. As I say, I don't think they need to buy loads of players. Maybe a couple of real quality additions, but you want to probably get a few players out the door, maybe chop the size of the squad, and who knows, I think they could achieve a lot with that squad. It's just all about the management of them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Chelsea, something else I see today, Chelsea have only won one of their last 19 Premier League games against sides starting the day in the top four. That was from where Chelsea have been the last few years. That was a really, really poor stat, that one. But just what I want to finish up, gents, for tonight, just to round up the other results. Everton are safe. They beat Brentford 1-0. Dyche has done it again. Fulham drew 1-1 with Palace. Man United drew 1-1 at home to Burnley. Burnley still got a chance to stay up. They've managed to get a few points the last few weeks. And Wolves beat Luton 2-1. Luton lose again. But what I want to finish up, gents, Johnny, I'll start with you first, is Bournemouth beating Brighton 3-0. Got to give a lot of credit to Bournemouth. I thought they were gone at one point this season, and Iriola's done really well to get them where they are. They're scoring goals. I think they've scored third most set pieces apart from Man City and Arsenal this season. And that change of goals there just after Christmas has been worked on. But what I wanted to say is De Zerbi and Brighton, and they have completely fell off a cliff. Graham mentioned it earlier and said European football, obviously, teams do struggle, but the goals they're conceded, I think he's got to get out soon before he's out, because that looks like a team that's on the down. And I'll ask you, do you think he'll be there next season?
That's a difficult one, mate. I just think it would be tough. It'd be harsh. I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing a thin squad. They have had injuries as well to that thin squad, first team players. They still have some right now. They've dipped their toes in Europe with all these extra games. I just don't think they're equipped for it, mate. I really don't. I think if we're being honest, including myself, looking back on it, maybe not realised just how much they were punching, you know, how much they were punching above. And I say that with respect, because I really do like Brighton. I like the way they run that club, the way they do their transfer business. There's not a lot of bad things to say about the club. I think what we're seeing now is the players that they do have, they're pretty much finished, their season's done. You know, there's a lot of young players in that team. A lot of the veterans who they look to, like your James Milner and that they brought in, they've been injured, been in and out for a while. So I think there's a lot of factors to it, mate. I still think the Zebris, he's a good manager, mate. I think if he went to a team with more resources and a better squad, I think you'd probably see more of what he can do. So, I mean, next season you'll have Brighton, who ain't going to be in Europe, have a lighter fixture load. You'll probably see them improve. I think for this season, with the squad they have, I think it's just been a step too far.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think looking at the squad, and it make a good point about them overachieving of late as well. But it will be interesting, Graham, to see where the Zerbi, if he does have a move. I personally think he'll be pushing for one this summer.
I don't like to see managers pushing for a move. I think it's probably got a good thing at Brighton. Look, I think it's a well-run club, but there's only so many big players you can sell, and at one point it's going to be tough. And I think that's what Brighton this season added to the factor of Europe. I like De Zerbi, I think he's a good coach. It'd be disappointing to see him pushing for a move. However, he'd be an attractive option for certain clubs around Europe. So yeah, one to keep an eye on. But I've just got to say, for me, rather than finishing on Brighton Bournemouth, I've got to shout out Everton, by the way, because I just need to say, I think Sean Dyche, who I think is a brilliant manager, like, I really like him. The job he's done at Everton is incredible. unbelievable the shit they go through this season, and they've got the fourth best defensive record, I think, in the league. I think I've not actually checked that, but I think they do. So you had a goal scorer, and who knows what they can do without without points deductions next season.
Yeah, not fair play. We've not touched on Everton tonight. I actually said about 3 weeks ago the way they were going and not scoring goals and the way Luton was scoring goals that I fancied Luton to somehow get out of it. But Johnny, just to finish up on that, Daesh and Everton, never in doubt, as Graham said there, even with the points deductions, when they've needed to get the results towards the end, they've grounded them out.
Yeah, like you said, mate, it looked for a bit where Luton might actually wiggle away and Everton would slide in, or even Forest, even Brentford for a while were looking like that too. And it can change so fast. We spoke about a few weeks ago, you know, all it needs is that one wee run, that wee slide, and that's Luton. Luton have won 3 on the skid. Burnley are drawing, winning. I don't see them getting anywhere near coming out of that, if I'm honest. For Everton, you get to this time of the season, like Graham said, they've been hit twice, they've had point deductions, they've got a hell of a lot going on off the pitch. They haven't really brought much in transfer-wise. The Daesh is, you know what you're going to get with Daesh, you know what kind of setup you're going to get, what kind of team you're going to get, and I think it's perfect fit for Everton, the way we expect them to play and with the personnel they have, and he's got them all ticking over really well. I mean, I think that's the last 6, they've won 4, they've drawn 1, they've lost 1. So that's the run you need at this time of the season. You know, I don't think you could ask for any more.
We did speak about it. I know I was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but see if they could get a player within the price range who can find the back of the net, whether that's a Callum Wilson, even a Chris Wood for a season, just somebody that knows, you know, has a decent goal record wherever they go, that's within a reasonable amount of money for Everton, like maybe those two players, depending in the selling clubs. See if they can find a goal scorer, man. They have the structure under Daesh that, you know, they're not going to give a lot away. So I think the job he's done, I mean, by the end of this season, depending how they finish up, minus that points deduction, they could have been, you know, 11th or 10th, which is unbelievable from where they've been the last 2 or 3 years.
They don't really have that, do they? They've only got Calvert-Lewin, who spends his entire season basically trying to get match fit. You know, he's constantly out and back in. You never really see him at 100%. It's rare. The other backup was Beto, who's really not done much at all. But you know who they're going to try and sign. You know, they're wanting that big, powerful, pain in the ass forward, like Wood. I mean, you know, that is the kind of fit for Everton. But he's got a reset for next season. He's got a chance to, you know, try and aim rather than be in that relegation zone and achieve a bit more. He's done well, mate. He has done well. The Ginger Mourinho, he's dragged them out of it, and like you said, they're safe now.
I just can't, just going to finish up, but I just can't believe they let Ellis Sims go, to be honest, and Sion Beto instead. Ellis Sims suits Everton down to an absolute T. I've been really impressed with him, to be fair, and yeah, I can't believe they let him go.
They gave him a wee bit of a run in the team, right? But really nothing long term. I don't think they gave him enough of a chance. I'll say it again and again and again. Why, from a Rangers fan point of view, I thought there's 5 million. I don't know what he went to Coventry for. I think it was around 5 million, right? All day long, you're signing somebody like that. He's done phenomenal for Coventry. From an Everton point of view, you can only hope that they've added some sort of crazy sell-on fee clause or something like that, because, yeah, I'm with you. I think with a wee bit of nurturing, I don't think he was that far away, and I think he's shown at Coventry that he could probably make that step up sooner. So, yeah, I totally agree. To sell him just to go and buy another kind of dud that's not really proven, I think maybe what will help them is potentially not having the big money available to go and buy a striker, and whether that's going to then be a stopgap with a Chris Wood or a cheap Callum Wilson from Newcastle because of the injuries. Maybe that's what they're going to need to do, but a goal scorer could make all the difference because they've got some decent wide players, they've got a solid defence, and a couple of decent midfielders in the middle of the park. So, I mean, they've got a good basis of the squad, they just need a goal scorer.
I don't think Sims got the chance. Sorry, Mason. I don't think Sims didn't get the chance. I know what you said, they've got a few sporadic runs here and there, but he never got the chance to settle. But I think it's always difficult if you are a young player coming through to try and get that run and sell if you're in a team that's fighting for relegation every season. Because 9 times out of 10, the manager's going to go with try and test it or try and find old war horses that he can bring in to, you know, get out of relegation. So especially for a forward, I think it's difficult to get that one. But I agree, it would have been perfect. I'm trying to remember the one game that Everton lost in that 6-game run. Oh, it was Chelsea, it was 6-0. How did I forget that?
You've done that on purpose. I know a number 9 they can sign. Cyril Dess is his name. You can have him in the summer. But anyway, gents, all left to do is thank you tonight. Start with Graham. Thanks for tonight, mate.
Cheers, Mason.
And Johnny, thanks as always.
And thank you. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, thank you as well. Make sure you give us a like and subscribe. We'll be back next week again to go through it. Maybe there's been a little step up in there, but we'll see. But as always, thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.